It's not about good guys and bad guys. I mean, the reality is that police officers are human beings just as much as the people we're interacting with. And when we go home, we have families and we have, you know, struggles. And, you know, there's not a lot of professions when you hear people defined as the work that they do. You know, cops are, police are.
Hey there, it's Julie. Welcome to Uncomfy. You know, a lot of us are struggling right now with how to stay open to other people when we seem to be living in different realities. I feel like I'm always walking on eggshells, but I also don't want to give up on connection. This is a podcast about staying with the moments we usually want to escape, the awkward ones, the tense ones, the ones that can honestly probably teach us something. So let's get uncomfy. Okay, you know that saying about trying to understand somebody by walking a mile in their shoes? Well, what if you were paired up with a stranger to literally walk a mile with that person? And what if it were someone who's really different from you and maybe even a little scary to you? Would you do it? What would you even talk about? Well, there's a program in Portland called Talk a Mile that pairs police officers with high school students and sends them on a one-mile walk around the school track. They have a list of question prompts to guide their conversation as they walk. And in the 4 years since Talk a Mile started, it has become part of the official training for new Portland police officers. Well, I'm joined today by Sergeant Aaron Schmautz, who has participated in Talk a Mile. He's a Portland police officer, and he's currently president of the Portland Police Association. Sergeant, welcome. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about your first Talk a Mile walk.
The first time I went, it was with actually two young high school gals. Both of them were very nervous about meeting us, walking with us. And so they said they wanted to have a peer with them. So it was actually me and another officer. And what was really interesting is, you know, a mile is four laps. And after about, I don't know, about half a lap, they were walking really fast. And then they actually started walking different paces. And they started getting pretty engaged in the conversation that we were having. And after about two laps, we were about a half a lap away from each other. And the conversation had gone well beyond the note cards that we were having.
So just so I'm clear here, like originally it was you talking to a young person and the other officer talking to a young person.
And they were kind of like doing it in tandem. The girls were holding hands. They were like, we're not letting go of each other.
Not cool with talking to these. But then over time, the two pairs sort of.
Yeah, because they began being very engaged in the conversation. Huh. And that to me was like an actual physical indication that the idea and the concept works. And the conversation, you know, the prompts on the cards are very basic, kind of like, you know, what do you think police officers should do? Have you ever had an interaction with police officers? Like things, you know, are the things in the city that you'd like to see that would make you feel more safe? Things like that, that are just kind of basic conversations. But after the second lap, we were just talking. We were talking about her experience, you know, her concerns about things she's seen nationally, her questions about what police officers do and why. And honestly, it was just really, really interesting and active listening for both of us. And it was funny, we actually ended up doing about a mile and a half. And she's like, I kind of want to keep going. And I was like, well, I'm older than you, so I'm getting tired. So I wasn't actually, but you know. But it was, you know, it was just, I thought, such a beautiful indication of how human beings, when you don't have, you know, barriers set up for you, how you can just kind of let it go and have conversation. And the physical indication of her being willing to separate from her friend, for me, was pretty special.
Were you at all hesitant yourself about this program or even have any doubts about, like, is this worth it? What good are we doing here? Why should I spend part of my day walking a mile with a kid?
Right. Yeah. You know, I think connection with young people is critical. I actually ran our school police, our youth services division for a year. I just think that the way to connect with the next generation is in non-crisis interactions with young people. You know, the thing that's so hard for a lot of people is the only time they interact with police is in some very critical or crisis situation, the worst day of their life. And for young people in particular, having an opportunity to just see police as human beings, as people, you know, who have kids, honestly, like not in uniform helps sometimes. I think it's important to understand the uniform. But, you know, I've done programs that are similar. I think this is the best manifestation of kind of those connections. And so I've been excited about this from the day I met Justin, but my own experience really just led me to believe that this is something that should be happening in every city in America.
So you mentioned Justin. Let's actually bring another voice into the conversation. This is Justin Fogarty. He's one of the co-founders of Talk a Mile. Justin, hey, thanks for your time today.
Hey, Julie, thanks for having me.
So what was the origin of this? What were you envisioning when you decided to try to have police officers and teenagers take walks together?
Great question. Our family started this organization coming out of the summer of 2020. After George Floyd's murder, we participated in a lot of the peaceful marches and things that happened here in Portland. But we'd always come home afterwards just kind of wondering what's next. And it felt like there was a lot of conversations happening about policing, about public safety, about community. But far too many of those conversations were happening about young people without those young people actually participating in it. So we just felt like there was a real opportunity to bring them into these conversations that were directly impacting their own sense of safety, their own sense of belonging, their own sense of community and agency here within the city of Portland. For a little bit of context about my family, my wife, Erica, is Black. Our son, Liam, who's now in college, was a high school student at this time. And he was a treasurer of the Black Students United at his high school. So he actually set up a meeting with the rest of their student leaders for us to be able to take this idea to them to help them understand or help us really kind of co-design what the program would be. And the students right from the start were really, really instrumental in helping us lay out what the program would look like, what kinds of goals we would have, what kinds of conversation topic prompts we would even use for these, you know, to help give these conversations a little bit of structure. But most importantly, the students were eager to participate. So them just actually wanting to really volunteer their time, wanting to be involved in these conversations that they felt were really important to them was really meaningful to us. So we had our first Talk a Mile actually 4 years ago this month. And that paired 15 volunteers from the BSU, from our son's school, and 15 trainees from PPB's Advanced Academy. So basically that last set of training before they go out into the field as a probationary officer.
It's interesting to hear you say that the Black Student Union there at the school, your son's group, was like, yeah, let's do this. They were eager because we were just hearing from you, Sergeant Schmatz, that the two young women that participated in your first walk early on were not having it. We're fairly anxious. So Sergeant, what's kind of at the root of some of that discomfort? And is it misunderstanding or what do you think is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, and I want to be clear. I mean, you know, they were there. They knew what they'd be doing. You know, we just prior to our school police being disbanded in 2020, we had been meeting with our Black and Latino student union at the most diverse high school in the state, having these conversations. I think the reality is once you actually get there, and you realize, like, I don't know this person. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what we're going to talk about. There is that kind of, you know, human reticence. And I think that's the beauty of the concept is we know there's going to be conversations that are hard. And the way to add to the kind of repair in that discomfort is to just add activity. You know, just the act of walking and kind of having some kind of distraction instead of sitting and looking across the table at someone. You know, when we were doing our meetings with the unions at schools, we would just bring food.
Justin, is there a reason that it's walking as opposed to just something else that you could be doing, you know? I mean, Sergeant Schmaltz mentioned, like, food, you know? You could always just get someone over together over pizza. Why walking?
There is a reason. This kind of dates back to the origin story, the genesis even of the organization. I'm a runner. And I've always noticed that when you run with people, whether it's your best friend or somebody you just met, you end up having these deep flowing conversations and you're both truly listening to each other and really being, you know, really sometimes being quite vulnerable, right? So that was kind of the beginning of the idea. Since then, we've done a lot of digging into the brain science of why this works, though. And when you're engaged in some sort of rhythmic activity like walking or running, that can actually create an effect in your brain called bilateral stimulation, which is basically both sides of your brain are working at the same time. So you can think about it kind of as your emotional brain and your rational brain, rather than one of them taking priority over the other, they're actually kind of working together. So when you do that, the simple act of walking can be really helpful for people reducing stress, reducing anxiety, but it also opens you up to new ideas, to new creative ways of looking at things. And then when you actually walk and talk with another person, another thing takes over, and that's interpersonal synchrony. So if I were to yawn, you might feel the urge to yawn, right? And if we're walking next to each other, we'll probably take on the same tempo. I mean, like, our steps might literally start to mirror one another. And that's interpersonal synchrony. It's our bodies subconsciously trying to help us connect. So the format is very deliberate.
Justin, what is the structure and how important is that? You talked a little bit about prompts, right? Like, give me a little more insight into what it takes to make one of these four laps effective.
Sure. Yeah. The basic flow is that we bring people together. We have a couple of minutes of people settling in, get name tags on. Then we give some opening remarks that just sort of set the stage for the day. You know, what the day is, what it's not. You know, we fully recognize we're not going to solve every challenge we face in the community in an afternoon. But, you know, trying to lay out kind of what we're there for, to take these literal and figurative first steps towards trying to create more connection and agency and purpose for young people. So then we pair them up and hand them a conversation prompt for that first lap, which is kind of an introduction. And that's got questions like, what is the story of your name? The second lap, we give the card to the student, and it's questions that that they can use to talk to the person in law enforcement. And that is questions about kind of what their purpose was, what led them to this line of work, and why Portland, right? Because no matter how anybody feels about policing, you know, there's probably easier places to be a police officer than Portland, Oregon. So, you know, what would make somebody actually choose this as the place they would want to do that work? What makes them want to contribute to that community here? And then the third lap, we give the card to the officer, and those are questions for the student. And it's things like, if the next 5 years were a chapter in your life, what's this chapter about? And then the fourth lap, the questions are about the future. So what would make this a better city for you personally? What gives you hope about the future? What is a contribution you can see in the community that might make a real impact in this community? So really giving them some sense of like, all right, what's next? What are you doing after you leave this track here today? All those conversation prompts and everything, though, we always encourage people, follow-up questions are the best questions usually, and these conversations are your own. So if you come into this and there's some particular story you want to share or question you've got for people, then please, by all means, ask away. And it really lets those conversations open up and start to veer into other directions or dig deeper on particular topics that are of interest.
Sergeant Schmutz, you kind of chuckled when Justin referenced that there are probably easier places to be a police officer than Portland. So what is so challenging about Portland policing?
Well, I mean, you know, Portland had 180 days of sustained rioting in 2020. Portland is I think, probably the most difficult city in the country to police. It's right up there with many of the others. And, you know, we have less than half of the amount of police officers we should for a city our size. Our funding is less than half of what it should be. And we do deal with a lot of just, you know, I guess the best way to put it is questions about the work we do. And so it, you know, at the end of the day, my dad was a police officer in Portland for 30 years. He got hired when I was 4 months old. I love this city. I was born in this city and I'll die in this city. And I want to make sure that our officers have all the opportunities they can to serve well. You know, to your point earlier, you asked whether or not I was reticent to do this. This is the fiber of what we are as police officers. Connecting with people and understanding what they're dealing with and how the work we're doing is received makes us better at our jobs, but it also makes our communities safer.
Justin, I'd love to have you chime in here. Thank you, Sergeant Schmutz, because, you know, I'm just thinking back to the origins of this program. 2020, we just heard things were very difficult. There was violence. There was a lot of tension on the streets in your own city. Your son is Black. Your wife is Black. And that was a moment where a Black man had been killed by a police officer in full view on video of the entire country, and a lot of concern about the safety of people of color as they interact with police, right? So what made you think that if safety were the issue and potentially concern over police conduct, why pairing Black students with police officers for a walk was the solution that you went to, or the action that you turned to?
Yeah, I think it gets to just the humanizing aspect of it, I think, largely for me. David Brooks says it's really hard to hate people up close. And that's always really stuck with me as being, I think, a pretty good way to look at the world, right? If you take a step back and even think, if the most kind of radical position on policing is like an abolished police kind of position is out there, right? And that was pretty commonly heard here in Portland, right? Even if they're right, that's not going to happen for quite a while, right? If that was the path we were actually headed down, and there was actually that was where we were going to end up, okay. But in the meantime, I've got a 6'5" son. You know, he's out in the world doing his thing, and I want to make sure that he's safe. So for those of us who are parents, especially of Black children, like we don't have time to wait for decades for us to sort out what the ideal is, and for us, it's more like I just want every day to be a little bit safer. But for me as a father, I thought the first step towards that would be simply police officers coming into it with exposure, with a comfort level of talking to young people, of a comfort level of talking with young people of color, but also just that ability to then see them as human, that ability to give them the benefit of the doubt, that ability to start things with a de-escalation kind of mindset. I think that was all what I was hoping would come from these conversations. And you know, one conversation at a time, I think, is really impactful.
It's really interesting to hear you, Justin, describe how sort of the target of your efforts was the police, right? To try to help them to see your son and other young people in more complexity, right? So that they would behave differently when they're out doing their work. Because I could also imagine, like, Sergeant Schmaltz was the sort of, like, reason the police wanted to participate, because they wanted to convince the young people that they're not bad guys and they're not the bad guys in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's so hard is it's not about good guys and bad guys. I mean, the reality is that police officers are human beings just as much as the people we're interacting with. And when we go home, we have families and we have, you know, struggles. And, you know, there's not a lot of professions when you hear people defined as the work that they do. You know, cops are, police are. And again, I'm a father. I'm a religious guy. I like to spend time with my family. I'm defined by a lot of things. But when I put that uniform on, I agree to do a lot of really difficult things to protect the community. But the only way to do that well is to do it with community and understand how they're being received and understanding who they are. And I think that moment in 2020, I think we all kind of forgot. And again, the greatest irony is that crime does impact people who are vulnerable, you know, a lot. And it also disproportionately impacts people of color, people, you know, immigrant communities, a lot of different people who don't have the voice that they should. And so it's so critical that we both connect that voice with the services we're providing and make sure that we're policing in a way that it's received. And that is what, like, kind of the core of police legitimacy.
Justin, what have you seen? What kind of hard data or actual improvements do you think have been born out of Talk a Mile?
Yeah, great question. So we measured quite a few things. So from the very first one that we started, we've asked for all participants to complete a short survey that gets at some quantitative and some qualitative things. And on the quantitative side, we ask things like, did this experience make you feel like you were seen and heard? And for that, we're at 98%. And then beyond that, we often get survey some of the more qualitative things. Look at things like, did somebody feel like they have agency? Can they actually take steps towards improving the community? And we see a great deal of responses saying that that's the case, especially with these students. And then finally, that leads to sort of a sense of purpose, of contribution. So what can I do in this community to make it a better place? And we definitely see that with the students as well. Them looking for other opportunities to engage, other opportunities to improve themselves in the community. And that's a question that we recently started asking probably in the last 2 years. And about 92% of respondents to that question say that this experience makes them more likely to be civically engaged. So we feel like that's a really strong sign that hopefully this is the first step towards students feeling like they have connection, agency, and purpose.
You know, Justin, I imagine there are folks listening who are thinking this is really cool and actually doesn't sound that hard. I'd love to maybe try to do something like this, whether it's with police or, I don't know, teachers or city officials, right? What would be the first step? What's your advice for folks looking to try to have these connections happen?
At the simplest form, it literally just takes you plus one other person. So lace them up, call somebody up, you know, bring your son, daughter, spouse, friend, neighbor, or even a stranger or something. But just, you know, literally taking those first steps and walking and talking with somebody, I think is, you know, it's pretty natural. So it does come pretty easy. But then if there's communities that are actually interested in Talk a Mile, we have grand plans of expansion. So we started here in Portland, obviously where we live. We branched out to some of the communities that surround Portland to our east. But we're really excited that next month we're going to bring the program to Seattle for the first time. We're partnered with the Seattle Seahawks, the Seattle PD, Seattle City Hall. And we are also in the process, though, of knowing that this program is something that scales pretty well, right? And it is pretty simple. And through that simplicity, we know that it is something that could be adopted in other places. So we're actively working right now to develop some toolkits mm-hmm. and trainings and supports so that we could actually bring the model to other cities and really roll it out the right way.
Justin Fogarty is the co-founder and executive director of Talk a Mile. You can learn more about their work at talkamile.org. Justin, thank you so much for taking time with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Julie. Really appreciate it.
And Sergeant Aaron Schmaltz is the president of the Portland Police Association. Sergeant, thank you for your time and your candor today.
Thank you.
And thank you for getting uncomfy with us today. I'd love to hear if you've had a walking uncomfy moment where walking actually helped get through some of the discomfort in a relationship or tackle a tough topic with somebody. Email uncomfy@byu.edu or connect with us on social media to continue the conversation. We are at uncomfy.podcast on Instagram. Uncomfy is a BYU radio podcast. Samuel Benson produces it, and the team includes Hyobin Kim and Abby Karras. Our theme music was composed by Kelsey Ney. I'm Julie Rose. I can't wait to get uncomfy with you again next week. Hey, it's Julie again. Just before you go, if you're a young adult or if you have one in your life who's trying to make sense of faith in the real world, there's a new BYU radio podcast you're going to want to check out. It's called Take a Leap. It's created by BYU students who are having honest conversations about what it means to live your faith at school, at work, and in everyday moments. So you'll hear real stories from young people of different backgrounds, what they're wrestling with, what inspires them, and how they are finding purpose. This podcast is a thoughtful space for young people to reflect and connect. You can find Take a Leap on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or anywhere you listen.